temp check. What kind of summer are we having this year? A family road trip summer? A beach bum summer? Or a wake me when the sun sets summer? With Instacart, choose your own adventure and skip the shopping side quests. Where available, you can get ice cream delivered to your hotel, sunscreen to the pool, or cold brew to your bed. Well, door, in as fast as 30 minutes. Wherever you find yourself this summer, you can get the goods. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
You can follow along here. Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line, you want to weigh in for Text in the City later, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And right now, Mr. John Parrotto on the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. And there he is. If you're on 93.7thefan.com, you get the added bonus of seeing all of our smiling faces, including Johnny P. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm having a hard time fitting my head into the panel. It's so big. But
Malzy goes through that every day. Don't worry about
it. Where am
I
at? There I am.
There you are.
Oh, there right. I go. Okay.
You look wonderful.
Okay, I'm doing everything in reverse. I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
I've never been better. I appreciate you asking. There's a guy that a friend of ours named Noah Hiles. We like to call him the Noah Constrictor. He's put out a bunch of a bunch of names here. Do any of these tickle your fancy, Johnny? And do you think any of these are realistic? Luis Robert, outfielder from the White Sox. Elias Diaz, Jacob Stallings, couple catchers out there in the National League. Randy Arozarena, who's had some postseason fireworks for Tampa Bay, or another name that you can come up with. What do you think the Pirates need, and do any of those names entice you?
Luis Robert certainly does if the Pirates want to open up the checkbook a little bit, because he's making $15 million this next year. And then he'll make the in his contract he has with the White Sox, they hold two option years in 26 and 27 for $20 million each year. And he's a very talented player. I know he hasn't played much this year. He had an injury and missed a couple of months, but he hit 38 home runs last year. He's got pretty good speed. He's a decent defensive center fielder, and certainly could play well on one of the corners if necessary. So, yeah, that's a name that really stands out to me. Catching-wise, I don't know if the Pirates would want it. You don't usually see catchers traded during the season because of the rapport you need to build up with the pitching staff. And, I think in the case of Jacob Stallings, he's a guy who would come along pretty quick. I mean, he's, noted for his work with pitching staffs and calling games. Elias Diaz was an interesting guy. The Pirates, it was Ben Cherington's first roster move. He cut him loose 5 years ago, and Diaz ended up the MVP of the All-Star game last year. So, those guys make sense. Arozarena, you'd be buying low. I don't know if the Rays want to give him up, but he's had an awful season up until the last few weeks. So I think any of those four certainly would be an upgrade for the Pirates.
You've been around this regime for, as long as they've been here, 5 years now? Do you get the sense that they will indeed go out and add? Like they're going to act, or do you get the sense that they're going to pull the, well, we're a year really early and next year is probably the year we're supposed to arrive, and so we're not going to, unload our bullets to try and win this year?
I think it's going to kind of be like what Neil Huntington did in 2012. I think he'll add, but being Ben Cherington, he'll add maybe some little pieces here and there. But I don't really think the Pirates are going to go out and get a Luis Robert or trade for 2 months of Pete Alonso or, Vladimir Guerrero for a couple of years. It's just not their MO. And frankly, I don't think that Cherington has the budget to do it. I don't know if it's not so much he doesn't have the wherewithal or the intestinal fortitude to pull off a big trade like that, but that just hasn't been their MO in 5 years. I mean, he's yet to really make a splash move. So I'm kind of with you, Paul. I think that'll be one of those things where, you know, they push it down the road another year.
Man, that'd be a shame. I mean,
it would be.
When you look up and down the roster, Rowdy's starting to get it going. You have to, I think Hayes will, but the obvious spots to me, Johnny, are center field, outfield, right? Center field. I don't think that Sawinski is going to dig himself out of this. Michael A. Taylor just can't hit. You have to find room for another bat. What do you see there?
I like Luis Robert if the Pirates, I mean, at some point, like Michael Keaton told Kevin McClatchy that time, you got to write a check. And I mean, Luis Robert's only 26 years old. He's a dynamic player. He would clearly, you know, step in and be their best overall all around player in the lineup if they traded for him. I would really like to see them do that. I know they would have to give up a lot of their top prospects, but you're getting a guy with 26 years old with 3 years of contractual control beyond this year. To me, that's the guy of all the names that have been floating out there that I would trade for personally. Whether the Pirates will pull the trigger or not, you know, you look back to 13, 14, and 15, they made some moves, but they never made that big splash move that could have pushed them over the top and got them to the World Series. So we'll see. It's a different regime, but so far they've been pretty conservative in how they've gone about things in their 5 years on the job.
Well, I think one of the things that's different now is they don't have that second period where, remember, you know, they had the first period of trades is like without waivers or whatever, and then couldn't they in August back then? Isn't that when they got Morneau and those guys in August?
Yeah,
they had to clear waivers or something, right?
Yeah, they got Morneau and, I can't think of the guy. Marlon Byrd. I couldn't think of his first name. Yeah, they got him, on August 31st because, guys could be put on waivers and still traded. But they ended that, I believe this is the fourth or fifth year now where there is no, there's one firm trade deadline and it's July 30th this year. And after that, the only trades you can make are somebody that aren't on a team's 40-man roster. So, I mean, they're not going to have that safety net of, well, we can wait one more month and see if we're going to be contenders or not. They're going to have to decide on that, by the middle of July. They're going to have to, you know, really think one way or the other.
And, John, here's my question then. And we talked about this with Joe a lot. If you look at the middle of the National League, I think it's pretty clear the Pirates are going to be right in the middle of it, right in the thick of it, in a month from now. So why not try starting now to make one of these moves?
You know, that's a good question. I often wonder why more teams don't make trades in June. I don't know why everybody waits until like July 28th to start making trades. But I do think part of it this year is there are very few teams who can really count themselves out of the pennant race right now. So I think a lot of teams are in the Pirates situation where they feel, hey, you know, even though our record's a little bit under 500, everybody else's is too. Maybe we can make it. And there's only a handful of teams like the White Sox and the A's and, the Colorado Rockies who really are out of it and have no chance to make the playoffs. So you don't have too many teams so far willing to deal, and those teams want to hold on to those players for a while to try to maximize the best return they can get on their veteran players.
John Parrotto on the Sullivan Super Service fan hotline. How many all-stars do you think the Pirates are going to get, Johnny? And if it was between Skeens and Keller, who do you think Major League Baseball would rather have in the game?
That's a good question. If it comes down to an MLB pick instead of the fans don't vote on pitchers, the players do. I got to think they go with Skeens if he continues to pitch like this, and it's not a knock on Mitch Keller, but, I mean, it's the All-Star game. You want big names, and right now Paul Skeens is one of the biggest names in the game. He's pitched great. There was a lot of hype surrounding him coming here, and he's lived up to all the hype so far. So, yeah, I could imagine Major League Baseball would like him in Arlington if he continues to be this successful.
Well, I think the biggest thing is, and we were talking about this you have Skeens. Your starting pitchers, your five starting pitchers, six actually. We counted Gonzalez too because they're obviously paying him whatever they're paying him. I think we added it up, John. Their entire rotation of starters, six guys, cost a total of $19 million this year, yeah. I forget how many we came up with, like 25 individual pitchers that are making more than $19 million in the league. You would think that now when you have all these guys, because next year, remember, Keller's goes from $5 million to $15 million next year. Now is the time to make these kind of moves because you're not paying your pitching staff anything.
I agree, Paul. It's kind of parallel to like in the NFL when you have a really good young quarterback on a rookie contract where you're not paying him an exorbitant amount of money and you can spend that money in this, you know, on other players. I think it makes a lot of sense for them to try to win this year because I think with their pitching, and I know everybody says this, so it's not an original thought, they really would be an interesting team if they got to the playoffs with the pitching they have. And I think they could legitimately do something in the playoffs if they made it. And I think they owe it to the fans at some point. I mean, they've had 27 losing seasons in the last 31 years. Rarely have they ever really tried to win. And I mean, at some point, I mean, that's the whole point of competitive athletics is to try to win. And I think if they have a chance this year, they need to go for it. Now, you know, I mean, I know they're not going to decide to make five big trades, but at least make that one big trade where you can get somebody that could maybe push you over the top and get you to the playoffs. Because if you do get to the postseason, you do have the pitching to be dangerous.
Johnny, it's always interesting to sort of consider what criterion we use when judging managers. Beyond the obvious is one loss, right? But I'm talking about when we judge these head coaches, so to speak, in this sport. There's strategy, there's bullpen use, roster management, there's keeping the overall temperature of the clubhouse, there's the improvement of individual players. What are the factors that you consider as a longtime baseball guy when you're judging a manager? What are the factors you consider most? And do you think Shelty is the guy to lead this franchise where it wants to go?
Well, it's always hard to determine exactly how much a manager means to a team. I think it's changed from the time I started covering baseball in 88. I think that the stern disciplinarian type manager doesn't work with today's players in 2024. And I think Shelty's personality works really well as far from that end of, player relations and getting the most out of his players. But the one thing that it kind of bothers me about this team, and this has been a problem for a while now, and you can say it earlier in his tenure, it's because they had a younger team. There's not always a great attention to detail with the Pirates. And like the whole thing, you know, kind of boils, if you want to boil it into one play, it was Saturday night in Colorado when Yasmani Grandal lollipop the throw back to Jared Jones and Ryan McMahon stole home. I mean, how do you let that happen? It's a big leaguer, and you can't let the guy off the hook and go, well, you know, he's learning. He's been in the big leagues 13 years. That's just laziness. That's just sloppiness. And you see it in other times, like Rowdy Tellez the other day on second base, less than two outs, ball hit to the shortstop. He takes off for third. I mean, that's something that's basic. I mean, that's something you can learn long before you get to the big leagues. If you're a baseball player, you know not to run in that situation with the ball in front of you. And you just see things like that. And when you see veteran players, guys who have been around for a long time, and it seems like that stuff goes unchecked. And I don't know. Good teams don't do that. Winning organizations don't make those kind of mistakes over and over and over again. So from that regard, I would like to see Shelty toughen up a little bit. Maybe he does behind closed doors, but I'm not necessarily sure he does. And it seems like a lot of this stuff is just okay. Let them slide. And I just can't see how you can do that.
Can you explain how a team that's got the starting pitching that this team has gotten really all year And the top three guys they have, but, I mean, you also have Falter. And you know what? For a while, Perez was good before he got hurt. How is it possible they have a losing record and they're minus 25 in run differential with that kind of a pitching staff?
Well, you know, they don't score runs, for one thing, and that really hurts them. I think they're 21st in the big leagues in runs score. At least they were as of a couple days ago. You know, the bullpen was a problem early in the year, and I think, you know, the bullpen had quite a few bad games that contributed to that run differential. And that's the other reason I think the Pirates should think about it. They have their bullpen straightened out now. Bednar's obviously over that injury that was affecting him early in the year. Aroldis Chapman seems to be throwing strikes now, and Colin Holderman's having a tremendous season. I mean, you talk about all-star, nobody mentions him. He might end up in the All-Star game with the year he's having as the eighth inning pitcher. So I think a lot of that run differential is obviously on the offense, but also the bullpen being so bad there for the first couple months of the season.
The unbelievable thing is the Pirates have another top 10 pick this year. They got the ninth pick in the draft this year, Johnny. Paul, may I engage John in a game of free association?
You might. You may.
You ready, Johnny?
Okay.
Who's the long-term catcher around here?
Andy Rodriguez.
Who's going to be the catcher in September?
Ooh. Yasmani Grandal.
You have a one-game situation, a tiebreaker game, to get into the three-game wild card. Who would you use, and who do you think the Pirates would use? I realize rotation could have something to do with that, but all things being equal, who would you pitch in that game, and who do you think the Pirates would? Keller or Skeens?
I'd pitch Skeens. I don't know if the Pirates would want to bypass the more veteran guy in Keller. It's not a knock on Mitch, but Skeens.
One position you think they actually will address at the deadline, even if it's a, you know, average guy?
Outfield, whether it's a center fielder or a corner guy, probably I think the center fielder would be most desirable.
Jack Sawinski will never be an everyday player in the major leagues again, yes or no?
No, I think I'm not giving up on him. He's got talent, and I think I wouldn't write him off just yet.
Key Brian Hayes will get hot like he did last year.
Yeah, he's too good of a player to keep being this bad.
Is the back a legitimate explanation for his issues?
Yes, and it concerns me long term that it could be an issue throughout his career.
David Bednar, 15 straight save opportunities converted. Mike McHenry says he looks as good as he ever has. You agree?
Yes. Yes, he's turned it around.
Pirates will make the playoffs.
No.
Andrew McCutchen will be with this team next season, too.
Yes.
You're buying stock in the Reds or the Pirates long term? Where are you spending your money, Johnny?
That's a good one.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to the Pirates because of those three starting pitchers, and they have a couple more guys on the way in triple and double A.
You're a wonderful man, a patriot, a spiritual guru. You're a mentor to Thanks. Paul. You're an example to City Limits and IT, and you're just an all-around good guy and a great baseball guy. Thank you, Johnny.
Oh, my pleasure, Joe. Thanks for having me. And you're so full of baloney, it makes me laugh.
Hey, when do they announce the All-Stars, John?
I don't know, but I hear Jason Bay.
All-Star. Yes. I want to be in the press box the day they announce it, just in case they don't give it to everybody, so we can.
I know.
Jason Bay, All-Star.
Jason Bay. Yeah.
Thank you, Johnny.
I'm for it. Actually, I'm for Jason Bay to be the center fielder right now.
What about Jiwon Bay? What becomes of him?
It looks like he's going on a rehab assignment here in a day or two. I don't know. He's sort of like faded from view. He was, you know, had that great start last year in April and part of May, and he really hasn't done anything since. And I don't see where he fits in long term here. And maybe he's somebody who uses his trade chip at the deadline.
Thank you, Johnny.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye bye.
He's the best, isn't he, Paul?
He's tremendous. He's and he's hilarious.
Yeah, I like him a lot. You have a new Flo Reid coming up. Do you agree with that? That if he had to buy stock in one of the two franchises long term here, Reds or Pirates, he said he'd still go with Pirates because of the top end of their rotation.
Again, it's hard to ignore those two guys.
I know, but these guys have Hunter Green and Lodolo. That's not far off.
Yeah.
And I think that position player wise, they might be slightly ahead.
They might be a little ahead, yeah.
But I think I'd still go. I'd still go Pirates. But man, not by much. Those two teams, you know, the NL Central, it's kind of mediocre, but nobody's horrible either. And there's a lot of good young players. And I see where the Reds are drafting second this year, second overall. And the Pirates are drafting ninth, which again gets back to you've had 5 years of hoarding prospects.
Right.
Through every means necessary, including the draft, where you've had great drafting position. They're drafting ninth overall. If you don't have enough good prospects to be able to trade some of the best ones and not even blink an eye, I don't know what you've been doing all these years.
But here's my thing. You have Keller, right?
Yeah.
Reynolds.
Yeah.
The two young pitchers. Actually, yeah. Bailey Falter, too.
Yeah.
You have O'Neill Cruz. All of them under control or contract or whatever.
Ke'Bryan Hayes, too.
And Ke'Bryan Hayes for what? 5 years? 4 years? 4 years, I think, after this one.
Add to it,
you
please.
You gotta go win. You know what I mean? You gotta go win.
Look at this. They're having amateurs take shots with the pros at this golf tournament. And that kid just put one on the green. God, I hope I play well, Paul, today. You playing?
No.
You gonna smoke a cigar at some point?
Nope. No.
Not till the weekend.
No, I'm gonna. I got a couple things I got to get done, and now there's a chance, depending on how I feel. My friends have a golf league at Manor Valley, under the lights.
Oh.
So, the tee off is like 7:30, so there's a chance that I might join them. You know, I jump in with one of the groups, you know what I mean? Because it's all a bunch of my buddies from high school. You know, because I grew up, Penn Trafford High School is what? A mile from Manor Valley, you know. And Manor Valley's great. When I was growing up, the lights were on every night. Have you ever played under the lights?
No, I want to play under the lights.
Listen, we're gonna
every sport's better under the lights.
Listen, you're going to have to figure out a Thursday night that you can get away in the evening.
Okay.
Because that's when they turn the lights on. We'll go out there. We'll just play in like the group behind, you know, the league. It is so much different than playing. Here's the thing. It's just hitting the ball where, you know, you're literally under the lights like you're in a stadium. Hitting the ball is a lot different, especially if you're sort of like in the shadows underneath sort of. It takes a little getting used to. So I lied when I said I'm not going to be playing golf after work because there's a chance I'm going to be out there at Manor Valley smacking it around under the lights.
Man, that sounds awesome. Let's take a dive into a mailbag next, Paul. This was a good one this week. Among other questions, I got the most challenging weather conditions you've ever encountered while either in the stands or covering a game, and several other questions here, including the tiebreaker between Tomlin and Cowher, the greatest coaches in modern Pittsburgh sports history, all of that coming up. It's Joe and Paul.
Temp check. What kind of summer are we having this year? A family road trip summer, a beach bum summer, or a wake me when the sun sets summer? With Instacart, choose your own adventure and skip the shopping side quests. Where available, you can get ice cream delivered to your hotel, sunscreen to the pool, or cold brew to your bed. Well, door, in as fast as 30 minutes. Wherever you find yourself this summer, you can get the goods. Download Instacart for free delivery on your first three orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Minimum $10 per order. Excludes restaurants. Additional terms and fees apply.
What a game this is, Paul. Steelers, Cowboys. In, what is this, Super Bowl 9?
10.
10. We just saw Terry Bradshaw unleash. That's a top five easily throw in Super Bowl history. That basically won them the game. He put it, it was a 64-yard touchdown pass in the box score. He must have thrown it 70 yards in the air while he was getting hit and concussed and leaving the field. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's exactly what happened.
So he's sitting there at 9 for 19 for 209 yards and two touchdowns and no picks. And you were asking, does he get enough credit? Why isn't he ever in the conversation of greatest quarterbacks ever? Is it because of his stats?
It's because
back
of his
then?
Numbers, yeah. It's because of his completion percentage and his interceptions. But here's the thing. To your point, he wasn't dinking and dunking like the quarterbacks of today.
Right.
And he was throwing the ball down the field.
I'm not sure if I had one game to win, he wouldn't be my guy. You know why? Because he has the guts to deliver that kind of pass.
Right.
With a game on the line.
He did it in that game. He did it in the 35-31 game, and especially in the Rams game.
Yes. Those deep balls won them Super Bowls.
Yes, exactly. But not just that, like you said, he had the guts to stand in there and do it.
How about LC Greenwood in this game?
I mean, there's a lot of people that want to try and say that Ben is, you know, the greatest quarterback.
Like, it's not even a discussion.
It still is
a discussion.
I don't know that I agree with that. I think you win four in 6 years. You know what I mean?
It's just the way it was. Right. Look at the best quarterbacks back then. Tarkenton,
Staubach,
whoever Plunkett. It was, their numbers
was
their,
Plunkett
were
the
what
guy
they,
with the Raiders back then, or
yeah, he yeah a little or bit later he won Super no Stabler's another
Stabler,
one
yeah
go look at all their numbers. If you put Ben back then or anybody, Peyton Manning or Brady, they would have the similar crappy sort of overall numbers compared to today. And then if you took Bradshaw and gave him a quarterback coach when he was 6 years old, and then he goes into all these systems and plays in the NFL, you better believe he would put up unbelievable numbers.
Here's my
thing. Plus, he was a great runner.
Here's my thing.
He was an animal when he ran the ball.
Here's my thing. I don't do hot takes, right? So I'm prefacing this by saying this is somewhat of a hot take. I think if the Steelers this year with this roster had Terry Bradshaw in his prime, I think I'd pick him to go to the Super Bowl.
I don't think that's a bad take.
Because I think that being able to throw the ball down the field like that and get big chunk plays, and you have a mobile quarterback like him that could run around and then – hand it off as much as he needs to hand it off to take. I'll be honest with you. I think they win. I think the Steelers would be a real problem.
That's another thing he never gets enough credit for, is he set his ego aside. He called the plays, for God's sakes. He doesn't have somebody standing on the sidelines like they do in college nowadays with gigantic signs or some offensive coordinator coordinating everything.
Right.
He's calling the plays, and when it was necessary and needed to win, he called Franco's number over and over and over again. He was regarded like, you know, ripped as being a dummy. The guy was very smart when it came to how to win football games. He called the plays.
Yeah.
How about LC Greenwood with four sacks in the Super Bowl? Why isn't that ever talked about? Did anybody else ever have four sacks in a Super Bowl? Limits, can you look that up? Most sacks in a Super Bowl. I know sacks weren't an official stat, but every time I look up at the screen, he's putting Roger Staubach on the ground. The guy was incredible. He should be in the Hall of Fame, Paul.
Because that was the unofficial numbers, and sacks weren't officially credited yet. Grady Jarrett, Coney Ealy and Darnell Dockett, as well as Reggie White, all with three apiece.
So this guy's got the record for sacks in a Super Bowl.
Dockett had three for Arizona in the 09 Super Bowl against the Steelers, Super Bowl 43.
He was great in that beast game until he needed to be. But then again, Paul, what Ben did in that Super Bowl with an offensive line that
was
had
a horrible offensive line.
Hartwig, Chris Kimoyatu, Darnell Stapleton, Willie Colon. Oh. No offense to any of those guys, but Ben overcame an offensive line to win a Super Bowl. Go back and watch some of the plays on the winning drive.
Right.
The way he's moving around.
Every play, it seemed like he was running for his life a little bit.
Phenomenal. All right, into the mailbag we go. As we get ready for the 1 o'clock hour, I want to dive into some AFC North stuff in the 1 o'clock hour. Which single player in that whole division is under the most pressure? This is in the wake of HBO featuring this division in Hard Knocks later on this season. So this is intergalactically red, as City Limits knows.
From here to Uranus.
Good point. Let me ask you this question, Paul, and this came from a man named Rono, Tony Rono, perhaps. He says, can you share the most challenging weather conditions you've ever encountered while either in the stands or covering a game professionally? Paul? You must have used to cover high school games where we kept our own stats in the stands.
Yes.
That was a nightmare.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There was a game... There was a game that I covered, and I'm trying to think of where it was at. Was it at, it might have been the Wolverina.
Yeah.
And it was, did the Wolverina have a real small press box? I don't think actually, one of these places where there was a real small press box, and there was really nowhere for me to sit.
Yeah.
So I had to be out on the field. And it started out okay. And then about 5 minutes into the first quarter, the sky starts to fall out. And I have paper because, you know, you have to keep your own stats and play by play when you do, you know, because, you know, my paper is soaked. Now I have like a plastic bag over my hand in the hand. You know, if you can imagine, my hands are in a plastic bag because I'm trying to write on this paper that's soggy. You know, it's ripping when you're writing. You know what I mean? It was by midway through the third period, I was freezing cold, even though it was like a September night. But I was soaking wet to the bone. I was standing in like this much water and mud, and every time you walked up and down the sidelines, it was.
I've been there.
That was the most miserable. Let me tell you something. That was one of the most miserable experiences I think I've ever had in a football game. I don't know if it was at the Wolverine. It was somewhere over in the East. Might have been at Penn Hills, or I forget where it was.
That's what you do when you're paying your dues. I was there too. These kids, some of the kids I taught at Waynesburg, like, what do you want to do? I want to be a play-by-play. They think they go like straight to the Penguins and start calling games. No, you got to go down and any opportunity you get, and if it's football, if you have to sit outside in the stands and keep your own stats and cover games, that's where you start.
The first game that I ever announced was during the pandemic. It was Baldwin, Seneca Valley. They had no room for us in the press box. I called it from the end zone with a monitor next to me and not even a headset. I just had a little stick mic that I had right in front of me and called the game from there.
You were a stick figure in that game.
Like Easton, you know, Stick or Crowley. Yeah.
Yeah, Easton Stick.
So when I was at the Vineland Daily Journal, I was the assistant editor. Assistant sports editor was basically another way of saying you're a sports writer, but we are also going to make you edit stories and all the other stuff because it's a small newspaper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we had a stringer. We sent out to a game. And so what happens was I would cover a game on Friday night. I'd come in, right? I would write my story real quick. Then I'd have to edit the stringer stories, you know, and lay out the page and everything. So he comes in, and I notice he's got his tape recorder, and he keeps hitting the button and stopping and then typing, hitting the button, stopping, typing. After about five of it, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Here, he got to the game, and he locked his keys in the car and he didn't have a tablet or a pen. So he got the genius idea to do the play-by-play into his tape recorder.
That's actually smart.
It's not when you're on deadline and you got to come back.
But what else was he going to do?
I told him, dude, just make up the stats.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we talking about here? I'm like, you understand, we have a half an hour to get this downstairs to be printed.
Oh.
And for every like minute that we're late, it's X thousands of dollars. So this story has to be sent in 50. First of all, it has to be sent to me in like 57 minutes so I can read through it and edit it in like 2 minutes and get it down there. So, but yeah, he's like, what am I going to do? I said, here's what you're going to do. Listen to that thing, right? As long as you get the scoring plays right and the right names on who scored, nobody's going to care about all the other stuff, right? So the box score was very interesting. And of course, you know how it is.
You got calls.
Get phone calls.
Parents. Coaches.
ADs. Both ADs called to say the stats were wrong. And I was like, oh, man, you know, I'll have to go back and look at it. I said, could you send me corrected stats? Well, no. Okay, well, then what are you calling me for? Yeah, that was a special. That year at the Vineland Daily Journal is where I really learned how to do this job, because I had to take photos. You know, we didn't have like a bunch of like cameramen. Every so often we'd have a cameraman be able to come to whatever event I'm at. But for the most part, I had to take photos. I had to lay out pages. I had to edit stories. I had to edit headlines. I had to write stories. I had, you know what I mean? And then the ultimate was the outdoors column was literally like this old, you know, redneck who would send it in. He would drop it off on Mondays, and it was on about like 8 yellow tablet paper written, you know, two lines. Like that's how big he wrote. 2 lines for each sentence, you know what I mean? And it was basically just, you know, some nonsensical story about him and his buddies hunting or him and his buddies fishing. And
I had to take the deer kills out of the Valley News. They would call in like 4 point. I didn't know what they were talking about.
Right.
I got a 4-point buck. What does that mean?
He would write these stories.
You get points for how many. I didn't know what the hell they were talking about.
He would write these stories about how they were fishing, and he had like, you know, nicknames for all his buddies. You know, and Cooter, he thought it was really funny. Huh? He called me this. Huh? I had to type it into the system. I had to type this thing here and make it somewhat readable. Like, you know, I had to try and leave as much of his voice, so to speak, in it, but I had to make it so it was like English, you know, so people might be able to read it. So I go to the editor. I said, dude, can't we find someone to do an outdoor column that is actually an outdoor column?
Can type.
And he said, this guy's been doing it for almost 40 years. So it's just the way it's always been done.
He's probably still doing it.
He might be.
50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Coming up, as you saw earlier this week, HBO going to have the Steelers on Hard Knocks along with the other teams in the AFC North. Let's take a closer look at this division as we head into training camp with questions such as, give me the single person, I don't care if it's player or coach, under the biggest spotlight, under the most pressure in this division heading into the season. I'll ask Paul and City Limits all kinds of questions about the AFC North.